Dedicated to the survival of American democracy in an increasingly dangerous world, this is Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney, acted as Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Policy under President Ronald Reagan, founder and president of the Center for Security Policy in Washington, D.C., the go-to man for defense and foreign policy issues, joined by the greatest minds in the security policy business, the special forces in the war of ideas at Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. This is Frank Gaffney, your host. We'll be guiding you about the very interesting and increasingly kinetic battle space of the War of Ideas with several distinguished colleagues. General Jerry Boykin will be with us right out of the box talking a bit about Libya, what's going on as a military man views this mission and all of its complexities. We'll be talking with Ralph Peters in segment two, another distinguished military man, also of a very strategic mind, visiting with him about how this fits into the larger question of what's going on in the Middle East at the moment, and particularly a prospective problem we may have with Israel if this precedent that has been applied here with Gaddafi applies there. Next, we'll be talking with John Perdue about the president's trip to Latin America and some serious mischief being made down there by Hugo Chavez. What will be the focus of this visit to the president, by the president, to Latin America? And I look forward to visiting with John about that. And finally, Gordon Chang will give us an update on the difficulties in Japan and also the increasingly prominent role being accorded by presidential candidates to the threat from communist China. So a very full program. But first, let's get straight to it with General Jerry Boykin. General, very good to have you with us. Thank you for joining us on short notice.
Well, I'm glad to be with you, Frank. These are interesting times.
They are indeed. Speaking of China, a famous curse by the Chinese, getting more interesting by the day. Give us your take, if you would, General Boykin, as a distinguished commander of special forces, man with deep experience in our military and particularly in those elite units. How are we doing? What are we doing? I guess is the first order of questions here. What are we doing as you see it in Libya? And then we'll talk about a bit about your estimate of how we're doing.
Well, I think that the no-fly zone was something that had to be done. I would tell you that I have gone on record as saying I was against establishing a U.S. No-fly zone. And my reason for that, Frank, is that the Europeans for the last decade plus have been reducing their military capabilities with the full expectation that the Americans were going to make up the difference for them. And now that the Europeans have a much greater stake in what's going on in Libya as well as most of the North African littoral there, I think that the decisions that they've made within this last decade are coming back to haunt them. And once again, they are relying on the Americans to do what they have really don't have the capability to do. So I think that as this thing has worked out, certainly a U.S. Command and control, U.S. intelligence, U.S. Logistics support is all very critical of this. But I think the planes that need to fly that airspace are, in fact, European planes, as well as Arab League and even African Union. But the U.S., I don't think, should be risking any U.S. lives in this.
Yeah, well, the question, I guess, occurs, as you say, and we're speaking with Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin, who finished up a distinguished military career in government career, serving as the Deputy Undersecretary of Defense for Intelligence. We are at the moment in the lead on this operation, governed by and for that matter directed by a multilateral authority from the Arab League and subsequently from the UN Security Council. So we have a mission that is designed by others and being executed at the moment principally by us, with the expectation that we're going to lateral this to people who, as you say, have a great stake in what happens, not least as a result of the probability that there'll be large infusions of refugees coming to their shores in Europe if they don't keep a lid on things in North Africa, but who don't seem to have the capacity really, to maintain a serious and let alone sustained no-fly zone over a country as vast as Libya. Am I missing something here, General Boykin?
No, I think you're absolutely right, because the entire continent of Europe has become a socialist entity. They have reduced their defense spending in an effort to use it for their social programs, and now they're suffering the consequences of that. And it's just like the Balkans, Frank, in 1995, when the French and the British went in to try and resolve the Balkans conflict, failed miserably, and turned to the U.S. for leadership. This is another example of American exceptionalism, and it is another example of why, instead of apologizing for America, instead of trying to reduce us to exactly what they are, we need to be proud of the fact that America has retained its capabilities politically, diplomatically, as well as militarily, and this is a time for us to take a certain amount of pride in the fact that America is the only one that can lead in these international kinds of conflicts.
Yeah, I very much take that point, and I certainly share your pride in what our military is doing and the proficiency that it has in an environment and where so few others, certainly on our side, are capable of exhibiting anything like this kind of power projection capability. But let me just ask the question again, General Boykin: are we not at this point governed by a UN mandate that says you're not going to take out Gaddafi, trying to find a way to hand this mission off, which has the potential to be, quite open-ended, it would seem to me, and knowing that there really isn't anybody else, as I say, on our side, not the Qataris for sure, not the French and Brits probably either, who will be able to maintain this kind of seemingly, as I say, indefinite no-fly zone if what we're about is not trying to stop Gaddafi permanently. And then the question arises, so who will be the principal beneficiary? So if you could work your way through these questions, sort of command arrangements, sustainability, and the very nature of the mission itself, General Boykin.
Yeah, I don't think that this notion that we will eventually hand this off and the U.S. will be out of it is very likely. First of all, given the sophistication of our capabilities with our various types of AWACS, which provide, airspace control and targeting information and deconfliction, the other members of this coalition don't have those capabilities. So I don't think that we're going to see any kind of handoff, if you will, which is what's been discussed. Secondly, I'm not sure that the UN mandate is very clear in terms of what we're trying to do. We're getting mixed signals. Are we trying to have a regime change, or are we just trying to protect the rebel forces there? And I think the mandate is clear on that. Obviously, everybody knows that what we want out of this is we want Gaddafi out. And I think that it's logical to say that everybody hopes that in this process that he's actually killed. But I don't think that the mandate is as clear as it needs to be. And the administration is certainly not giving us a very clear message in terms of what the expectations are. Frank, I hope that right now, today, that we have some kind of special operations forces in there from Britain, France, maybe Germany, that are helping to provide some kind of support to the rebel forces in there in terms of arming them, training them, helping them with their planning, and certainly giving them the intelligence that they need. I don't know that. I've been told that, but I don't know that that is true. But I think that the U.S. role in this thing is going to essentially stay about where it is right now, even though there may be some rhetoric about how we're transitioning to a handoff. I don't think that's actually going to happen.
Yeah, I think you're probably right. And as to the question of, folks on the ground, I know the Brits had some special forces units in for a time talking to, just trying to get a diplomat in to talk to these so-called rebels. And General Boykin, we're going to have to leave it at that, I'm afraid. I must say I'm anxious about arming rebels and giving them intelligence and so on without a better understanding of who the devil these guys are and what they will do should they come to power. And I know that this is a matter that warrants some further discussion with you. I hope we'll be able to do it in the very near future. Thank you for your service to our country, sir, as always, and for your contributions to Sharia, the threat to America, our collaborative effort. And we'll look forward again to visiting with you soon. Next up, Ralph Peters is going to join us, and we'll get his take on all of this and the possibilities for problems ahead if the Qaddafi president applies to Israel. Straight ahead.
First line of defense in the war of ideas. Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
I was able to lose the 80 pounds I gained due to pregnancy. It was pretty easy. Eat whatever I wanted and not think about it.
The Meta System from Judy Singer has been helping make weight loss easier for a quarter century.
My husband's grandmother used it 20 years ago to lose weight for a wedding and said it was the only way to go.
The Meta System also has an excellent support staff.
They were very supportive. The first time that I ordered the product, they called me and suggested that I order a lower dosage to begin with. They didn't want me to jump the gun right off the bat, and it was nice to know that they actually cared.
And the weight loss is so dramatic, people wonder.
With the Meta System, I've got many questions about how I managed raising a baby and working full-time and lose the weight and eat whatever I wanted.
People who use it recommend it.
I suggested the Meta System to my mother, and she has lost 30 pounds.
Learn more about weight loss with Judy Singer's The Meta System by calling 800-711-JUDY, 800-711-JUDY. The Meta System from Judy Singer, the powerful, all-natural way to lose weight, 800-711-JUDY.
The first step in winning a war is to know whom you're fighting. 9 years after 9/11, the U.S. security establishment has failed to tell us. The very words we need to describe the war are being outlawed. We went from the war on terror under Bush to the war on man-made disasters under Obama. Neither identifies the threat doctrine behind the aggression, Islamic Sharia law. That's why the Center for Security Policy assembled Team B, an independent group of national security professionals, including Bill Clinton's Director of Central Intelligence, James Woolsey. The result is a book that challenges the assumptions of the current administration and exposes the supremacist nature of Sharia and the jihad its adherents are obliged to engage in. This report names the names of those responsible and makes plain the mortal peril now posed to America's Constitution, our national security, and way of life. For more information, visit ShariaTheThreat.com or order your copy of Sharia, The Threat to America at Amazon.com.
China is a leader in the green movement? Yeah, Glenn Beck is as surprised as you.
Man has to do the things to take care of the environment. Americans are some of the best in the world on the environment. Really, China?
You're really looking at China to lead the world.
You know what our skies and our oceans will look like when China takes the lead? Which, by the way, check your watches, I think happened about last week.
Glenn Beck, weekday mornings 9 to noon on 1260 WRC. New Choice, Intelligent Talk.
You're listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
Welcome back. We are joined by Ralph Peters, Lieutenant Colonel, United States Army, retired, a man you see frequently on Fox News and in other media outlets, commenting, among other things, about Libya and the Arab awakening, as it's called, across the Middle East at the moment. We wanted to visit with Ralph, who has contributed to our understanding of these things periodically and with great effect. Ralph, thank you very much for joining us, and welcome back to Secure Freedom Radio.
Well, Frank, it's always great to talk to you.
Let's talk a little bit about what this awakening business is. Who's awakening and to what?
Well, and that's a very important question. It's fundamental, Frank. It is not Muslim fanatics. It is not Al-Qaeda. Even the Muslim Brotherhood is only playing in the margins. They were totally surprised by this happening. This is the long-oppressed people of the Arab world, people who run the full political spectrum from European-oriented liberals to Muslim conservatives, who have just had enough. It just reached a tipping point, as you and I have discussed, and it was triggered by a fruit vendor in Tunisia burning himself to death in protest. And sometimes it's that little, you know, it's John Brown at Harper's Ferry that triggers everything. And enabled by postmodern means of communication, from satellite stations to the internet, to tweets, to handheld camera phones, it all hit critical mass. And we saw it leap from country to country. And the real crisis came not in Tahrir Square in Cairo, but more recently in Libya, when it looked as if the reaction, the old oppressive dictators, might be able to turn back the tide as the world just twiddled its thumbs and Gaddafi began slaughtering the freedom fighters, retaking city after city. What we saw this weekend was the international community, or at least leading elements of it, intervening at literally the last hour possible, with Gaddafi's tanks pushing into Benghazi, the last major rebel stronghold, and taking them out. So
right.
That's
Ralph, let me just interrupt you for 1 second to both reintroduce you and
sure.
firm up a particular point that I think is important here. We're talking with Ralph Peters. He is an author. He is an essayist. He is a commentator. Some would call him a pundit. He brings great, I think, practical military experience to many of these issues. And I do want to talk a little bit about the military aspects of this. We were discussing them with Jerry Boykin before you joined us. But Ralph, just to drill down on this one question for a moment, let's just say for the purposes of discussion that you're right, that there is a widespread feeling of revulsion at the old order and desire on the part of people who are genuinely aspiring to freedom.
Yeah, and to economic opportunity.
And economic opportunity. Let's just say for the purpose of discussion that that's right. I'll stipulate to it. My question to you is that what they're likely to get under basically any foreseeable circumstances? Do you not fear that what comes out of this sort of, well, often it's a melee, really, as much as it's a revolution. But what generally transpires is those that are most organized, disciplined, and ruthless prevail. And do you see there really being anybody that would check the folks that genuinely fit those descriptions, namely the Muslim Brotherhood and their ilk, whether it's in Libya, Tunisia, or Egypt, or Yemen, or elsewhere? And does that not give you some cause for concern about particularly arming rebels, as we call them, in Libya at the moment?
None whatsoever. Frank, I refuse to worry about the boogeyman under the bed when I'm dealing with the boogeyman on the bed. What would be worse than Gaddafi? He's, until the advent of Al-Qaeda, he was a terrorist chief and responsible for more American deaths, as well as many others, than anyone else. Look, it's not going to be easy. There will be setbacks. There will be disappointments. We will not like the result of every election in the Middle East. In some countries, perhaps even Egypt, the old bureaucracy and the old guard will find ways to reassert themselves. What I am looking at is historical inevitability. This had to come, better now than later, because the longer it's delayed, the more explosive the outburst is going to be. Now, these countries, each one is individual. Each one has its own problem sets, its own population makeup, its own history, and we're going to get some very different outcomes. But it's useless to wring our hands and say, oh, my God, I wish it was 1985 and Mubarak was still power. It's not 1985. Mubarak's gone. Gaddafi is going to go at some point. Assad may go. So instead of wringing our hands like little babies and worrying about that boogeyman under the bed, let's start thinking objectively about how we can best exploit and guide the future of the Middle East. Now, we're only going to be able to play at the margins, but we got to play constructively at the margins, and just declaring that the sky is falling, that somehow Gaddafi and Mubarak were better than what might come, is counterproductive, weak, and stupid. We've got to deal with the world as it is, and these revolutions, the tendency is good. The outcome won't always be good, but it's going to be better than Gaddafi.
Yeah, look, you'll find no defense of Gaddafi here, and I certainly feel strongly, as I think you do, that it was an abomination, as I said to Jerry earlier, that the United States government rehabilitated this guy.
Absolutely.
And propped him up and otherwise did business with him for a number of years now. Ralph, let's just say for the purpose of discussion again that we can only play at the margins and that we may not like what comes out of some of these things. Having said that, Is there, in your judgment, any reason for concern that what we will wind up with, especially if we fail to help bring about a revolution that topples what I believe to be the single most dangerous regime in the region, namely Iran's, that we could see a consolidation of the sort of Sharia-adherent pro-Islamist parties, forces, let's say, that may or may not agree with each other on every point of Islamic law, notably the Shia-Sunni disagreements, but nonetheless are aligned reasonably perfectly in their hostility towards us. So, in other words, shouldn't we also, according to the Peter's logic here, be working assiduously to assure the downfall of that regime in Iran?
Well, how do you do it? Frank, I deal with the world as it is. Yeah, I would love to see the Iranian regime go. But right now, it's not going to go. It's got a death grip on power. That could change very quickly. But for now, let's focus on where things are really changing. And they are changing for the better in Libya, hopefully for the better in Egypt, definitely for the better in Tunisia, dubious in Yemen, Bahrain, I'd worry about that one because the Iranians have their paws in it. Syria, anything that makes trouble for Assad is good news. Let's focus on what's doable. And again, it's not helpful to create this boogeyman of a Sharia bloc stretching from Morocco to Tehran and through Afghanistan to Pakistan and all the way to Berkeley, California. It ain't going to happen. There are too many rivalries in the Arab world. There's Sunni and Shia rivalries. Look, there will be Islamists in government in various countries. There are Baptists in government here. Religion plays an important role in every society. The trick isn't to condemn every Muslim. It's to divide and conquer and nail the terrorists.
Yeah. Look, I think you and I may simply disagree about the extent to which they're boogeymen as opposed to real forces that are operating and that are perfectly prepared, as we've seen, the Qaradawis and the supreme leader of the Muslim Brotherhood, Vahdi, working with and happy to consort with the mullahs in Tehran. In fact, saying that that's what they want to bring, that kind of regime to Egypt. We'll
when
see whether it'll happen.
When you draw people into a corner, they will turn to any friends can.
I don't think we've driven them into a corner. My concern is we're not driving them into a corner enough, and that if we are not careful, Ralph Peters, we will find that we are not. I'm going to have to leave it at this, Ralph. We're out of time.
Tell me how you would stop the Muslim Brotherhood from participating in elections.
I'm telling you that I want to be careful about cheering them on or arming them or otherwise enabling
them. I'm not cheering the Muslim Brotherhood on.
Well, no, but to the extent that others are, and I think that may be exactly what we wind up doing in Libya, it's going to be a problem. Ralph, we're going to have to leave it at that. Thank you for a stimulating first salvo. I know we will be talking about this more in the future, and I look forward to it. Thank you so much for joining us.
Bye.
Next up, we've got John Perdue on the president's visit to Latin America. Is this the beginning of a new focus on a real problem in our front yard? Straight ahead.
To securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
Hey, parents. Finding it hard to communicate with kids in today's world of ever-changing slang?
Hi, son.
Excuse me?
Introducing the Communicizer. Just strap non-toxic Communicizer to your mouth and go from boring old man speak.
I'm here if you want to talk.
To 100% off the chain.
Text me whenever, yo.
It's that easy.
Thanks to Communicizer, I'm relevant to my kids again. I'll fly, boo.
And now when you buy Communicizer, you get the auto-tune attachment free. Sounds so hip-hop, your kids will want to talk to you for hours.
I used to have to walk 3 miles uphill to school every morning, shorty.
I love you, Dad.
I love you too, son.
Communicizer is not available in stores because it doesn't exist. But that's okay. You don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. Because kids in foster care don't need perfection. They need you. For more information on how you can adopt, go to AdoptUsKids.org. A public service announcement from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Adopt Us Kids, and the Ad Council.
For decades, the Democratic Republic of Congo has endured economic collapse, poverty, and war. More than 3.5 million people have died in the conflict. Today, rebel forces continue to wreak havoc in the eastern Kivu provinces. The International Rescue Committee estimates that 30,000 children have been recruited as soldiers, and thousands more have lost their parents. Most of these children lack the most basic level of goods, security, and most especially, clean drinking water. Yet, there is a well of hope coming to eastern Congo in a village called Uvira. Washington, D.C.'s National Community Church is partnering with Global Outreach to bring a water pipeline to the Congo for Christ compound, an orphanage for children who have lost their parents to war and AIDS. Building a clean water source will sustain the school, provide for the children, and hundreds more in the village. Go to www.waterforcongo.com. Learn about the work of Global Outreach and give. You can be part of the community in Uvira, and like a well, you can be a source of hope in life. www.waterforcongo.com.
Hi, I'm Drew Brees, NFL quarterback for the New Orleans Saints, here with Bugs Bunny to remind you to get moving every day.
Because when you get moving an hour a day,
you fuel your body and your mind.
So what do you like to throw around the football like Drew?
Skateboard.
Play frisbee in the park.
Ride a bike.
Kick the soccer ball around.
Or dance in your room.
Just move it your way.
Because nothing makes you feel better than moving every day.
And that makes you part of a winning team.
So be a player.
You'll have more energy to do the things you like to do.
Move it your way and be a player.
Get up and play an hour a day, Doc. Check out how to be a player at letsmove.gov.
Head online to get tips on great ways to get moving every day.
That's right, at letsmove.gov. Let's hear that one more time, Doc. That's www.letsmove.gov. A message from the Ad Council and HHS.
Following is an important message from President Clinton and President Bush.
In January, Haiti experienced an environmental catastrophe and human tragedy of epic proportion.
But thanks in part to the generous spirit of the American people, the country of Haiti has survived. But now the people need to thrive. President Clinton and I have seen firsthand the power of your contributions at work.
The Clinton-Bush Haiti Fund is on the ground, funding programs that create jobs, teach skills, and assist local businesses.
Our fund is dedicated to supporting initiatives that encourage local entrepreneurs and help build an inclusive economy that lifts up everyone.
Help us continue this work so the people of Haiti have an opportunity to prosper.
Thank you.
To donate, go to ClintonBushHaitiFund.org or text QUAKE to 22222 to give $10. Message and data rates may apply. Brought to you by the Clinton Bush Haiti Fund and the Ad Council.
Hi, this is Frank Effney. You're listening to Intelligent Talk on WRC 1260 in Washington, D.C.
Now more with Frank Gaffney.
We're back, joined by John Perdue, the Director of Latin America Programs at the Fund for American Studies. He is the author of the forthcoming War of All the People, about what is happening in Latin America as a nexus develops between indigenous and Middle Eastern terrorist groups and the threat both pose to us. John, it's great to have you back with us. Thank you so much for joining us.
Great to be here, Frank. Thanks.
Let's start with the president's trip to Latin America underway at the moment. He's, of course, taking some criticism for being elsewhere when there's a war on, as we've been discussing in the previous segments, in Libya, to say nothing of problems elsewhere. I must say I'm rather sympathetic to the fact that anything we can do to get the Obama administration to pay more attention to this hemisphere is probably a good thing. But give me your take on his trip, the substance of it, and what might come of it.
Well, the first part of it so far to Brazil, which is the cornerstone of his trip so far, I would say is somewhat uneventful as far as Latin American politics go. The fact that Brazil is looking for a permanent seat on the UN Security Council is what's overshadowing it for Brazil. And Obama kind of scathingly mentioned it in one of his speeches on Saturday, which led the Brazilian newspapers to comment that he was being very superficial about it and hadn't committed anything. And you know,
John, if I could just interrupt you on
sure.
that, he's of course endorsed the bid of the Indian government to become a permanent member of the UN Security Council when he was visiting there. So I can understand why the Brazilians would feel slighted if he's not pandering to them in the same way.
Right, exactly. But if you remember, one of the things I spoke of at the Center for Security Policy event about a month and a half ago, right about the time of the elections, and what the point of the talk was whether Dilma Rousseff, who's the current, recently elected president, was going to be simply a placeholder until Lula could run again in 2014.
The previous president for two terms, I guess, right?
Yes. And, you know, most people, even Lula had made comments that had kind of indicated that. And, you know, there had been a couple of good things that had come out since Dilma took office, and that was the fact that she had condemned Cuba and Venezuela, at least mildly on in some points, about human rights abuses, which was a break from Lula, who had really joined the Foro de Sao Paulo and a lot of the organizations that Chavez and Fidel Castro run in Latin America. So,
and somewhat surprising, given her own background as a revolutionary, I guess.
Absolutely. So. She's an ex-guerrilla and far-left guerrilla in Brazil.
Right.
But she had come out, and most people are speculating now that she's doing that to try to get a little traction on this Security Council seat. So that remains to be seen.
And more generally, what do you expect, if anything, from his visits, where, I guess, to Chile and El Salvador? Is that the rest of the trip?
Yes, it's kind of ironic. He launched the attacks on Libya, or the no-fly zone, I guess is the best way to say that, while he was in Brazil. But the entire trip was kind of worked around an economic summit to try to increase trade between the two countries. And, of course, that's going to be the theme in Chile as well. We've had a really good relationship with Chile as far as trade terms go, and, you know, Chile has been a major leader in the hemisphere of expanding the free trade agreements. They have it with China, with everyone. They do it unilaterally and without having to have the rest of the continent on board. And he's going to talk about that. They're already getting protests there from far left groups saying that they demand that he apologize for the U.S. involvement in 1973 of the coup that overthrew Allende.
Well, that's a hardy perennial, I guess. Speaking of trade, John Perdue of the Fund for American Studies, Latin American program, is our guest. Talk about the evident effort being made by Republicans on Capitol Hill here in the United States to euchre the Obama administration into approving the Colombia Free Trade Pact. Is that likely to break things loose in your estimation? And does this trip serve as a backdrop perhaps for a change in stance on the part of the administration, who's not been all that keen to do so to this point?
There have been occasions in the last 2 years where, you know, people here in D.C. have thought something was about to happen on the Colombian Free Trade Agreement. You know, they lean toward the Korean trade agreement first, and they tend to downplay the Panama and the Colombian trade agreements. But, you know, it was a notable omission to not go to Colombia, who is probably our greatest ally in the region, and they got a lot of complaints about that. But you know, they've had, for some reason, Uribe, the ex-president of Colombia, has become a target of, I guess, you know, international trade unions now. But there was a lot of controversy a couple of years ago about the supposed killing or the exorbitant killing of trade unionists in Colombia. And they did a quick study of it, and there was even an article published in the New York Times that showed that you were much safer as a trade unionist than any Colombian citizen.
Yeah.
And so,
not being targeted by the government. So, in other words, this was a pretext for inaction on an important trade agreement with an important strategic partner. And perhaps that's being that folly is being compounded by the president's failure to visit Colombia. John, let me switch gears slightly. Roger Noriega, a prominent official in the Bush administration, responsible for the Latin American beat, wrote over the weekend in the Sunday Washington Post that Hugo Chavez of Venezuela actually convened a summit of terrorist organizations of the kind that you're focusing on in your upcoming book, The War of All the People, in Caracas, Venezuela, presumably for the purposes of enhancing their ability to operate from and presumably, furthermore, wage war against Western interests, including those of the United States. What do we know about this summit? What do we know about what these guys are doing? And talk a little bit about Hugo Chavez and his political fortunes at the moment in that context.
Uh, this was an amazing revelation. I couldn't believe that we've not heard anything about this prior to now. This was in August of 2010. Iran actually suggested this meeting, and it took place at Fuerte Tiona, which is the Venezuelan military intelligence headquarters in Caracas. And this was senior leaders of Hamas, Hezbollah, and Islamic Jihad meeting in Caracas with, this is on board with Chavez and the others. You know, we've reported in the past on members of his cabinet, Tarek El Asami, and others that are that have been reported to have been recruiting young Venezuelans to send them to Lebanon to train and guerrilla tactics, things like that, and a lot of other nefarious individuals, and even those that are wanted by the FBI list of most wanted terrorists were involved with this meeting. Mohammed Shalal was in this meeting, and who's Hamas's supreme leader, Khaled Meshal, Hezbollah's chief of operations. So this is some characters that nobody in Latin America would want to be affiliated with, and Chavez, the fact that Chavez had him in Caracas at the military headquarters shows just an amazing ability, an amazing confidence on their part that nothing's going to happen to them. So
yeah, and that they can with impunity really ally themselves with and help facilitate the activities of enemies of the United States. Hugo Chavez is facing some hunger strikers at the moment, an election in 2012, which I gather he's saying we're interfering with. Are there any chances that he will be removed from power one way or the other and perhaps thereby end the blight that he represents on our hemisphere and our interests there?
I would put well below 50%. I guess is the most conservative estimate I could get that he might be. He's actually made statements, not only him, that he's not going to leave if he gets defeated in the election in 2012, but his head of his commander in chief of the military has actually made statements saying that the military will not allow an opposition candidate if they win to take office. So you know, they may get far more oppressive between now and the end of 2012,
yeah.
We'll see.
And the quickly on the human, the hunger strikers.
Yes, this has been, it seems like, the only effective form of protest that they still have in Venezuela. There's been 35 hunger strikes so far this year. I think there were a little over 100 in all of 2010. And this has actually gotten some movement. Chavez agreed to release some political prisoners there, but as 3 weeks later now, and I think only two of them have actually been released. So it remains to be seen whether this gets anything done. But it's actually we're seeing a lot of Chavez spokespeople denouncing these people, and some of his more thuggish protesters actually went and waved meat and wanted to hold a barbecue near them a couple of weeks ago. So
psychological warfare, probably the least bad things that these folks can be subjected to. John Perdue of the Fund for American Studies, thank you so much for joining us. Gordon Chang is up next, talking about the latest from Japan and the Chinese are featuring in presidential politics. More on that in a moment.
Go to SecureFreedomRadio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
I went from a size 18 down to a size 5, and I was able to keep it off.
Angie had some serious challenges.
I had gone through a divorce and put on quite a bit of weight. There was an accident where I was put on a lot of medication, and I put on over 60 pounds. I tried every kind of diet, but diets just did not work.
Diets don't work is something they hear a lot over at the MetaSystem from Judy Singer.
I heard about Judy Singer's MetaSystem, and I thought, well, you know, couldn't hurt to call, and I called them up, and they told me all about the product, and I thought, well, I'll give it a try. From the first week that I was on it, I wasn't hungry a lot, and it was just amazing. Jumping about 3 months ahead, I dropped 63 pounds.
If you're ready for a natural product that cleanses your system and helps you lose fat, talk to a Judy Singer counselor about the MetaSystem. Call 1-800-711-JUDY, 1-800-711-JUDY. The MetaSystem from Judy Singer. Powerful, all-natural weight loss. 1-800-711-JUDY.
Hi. This is Frank Gaffney. My day job is running the Center for Security Policy, which each weeknight brings you this program. But Secure Freedom Radio is just one of the important contributions the Center makes to the common defense. We call our team the Special Forces in the War of Ideas. Like the real Special Forces, we strive to be agile, creative, and highly effective in identifying threats to our country and how they might best be countered. We can't do all this without you, though. Also, like the real special forces, ours need ammunition. And in the war of ideas, ammo is money. The Center is a non-profit, tax-exempt organization. Contributions to its work are tax-deductible and an important investment in your security and freedom. Find out more about the Center for Security Policy and how you can help keep its special forces team in the fight by visiting securefreedom.org. Many thanks.
If your walls could talk, what would they say?
I have held the same mirror for 13 years.
I have been decorated with purple dinosaurs, baseball teams, and football helmets.
I have witnessed 33 Thanksgiving dinners and one wedding proposal.
I have tiny notches marking the growth of three children.
I have caused a learning disability.
I am the reason that a fifth grader simply can't sit still.
I am responsible for a five-year-old's rage.
Just because you can't see lead paint doesn't mean it's not on walls, doors, windows, and sills. Today, lead paint poisoning affects over 1 million children. If your home was built before 1978, your family could be at risk. Let's make all kids lead-free kids. Log on to leadfreekids.org or call 800-424-LEAD.
I am the reason a child has trouble hearing.
If your walls could talk, what would they say?
Brought to you by the Coalition to End Childhood Lead Poisoning, EPA, HUD, and the Ad Council.
Dennis Prager is skeptical that the changes in the Middle East will be good for the region.
There is little historic precedent for being optimistic about political developments in the Arab world.
That doesn't mean it will never be good.
It just means that based on history, there is not a lot of reason to be optimistic about anything that happens in the Arab world.
The Dennis Prager Show, weeknights at 10 on 1260 WRC. New choice, intelligent talk.
If you're a veteran of Iraq or Afghanistan, like me, coming home can be harder than expected. I felt a little out of place, but it turns out I wasn't alone. At IAVA.org, there's a free online community of thousands of OIF and OEF vets who've got your back here, just like they did over there. So now, I'm never alone. I can get the resources I need and talk to tons of people who understand where I'm coming from.
Whether it's navigating the GI Bill,
or VA hospitals,
managing the transition home, or meeting people you can share stories with,
you'll find it at IAVA.org. Even if it's just everyday stuff, like getting tips on where to find a nice sweater for my dog.
Did he just say
sweater?
That?
Really?
What?
Okay, maybe not that, but everything else. No matter where you are, Iraq and Afghanistan Veterans of America is there for you. Join our community at IAVA.org.
We've got your back.
Brought to you by Iraq Afghanistan Veterans of America and the Ad Council.
Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
Welcome. We're joined once again by Gordon Chang, our expert on Asia here at Secure Freedom Radio. He is the author of The Coming Collapse of China. Also writes a splendid column at Forbes.com. You see him on Fox and in the Weekly Standard, the New York Times, and elsewhere. He is a valued contributor to our coverage of a very important beat. And Gordon, maybe we could start with your update on how things are looking in Japan 10 days or so after this horrific trifecta of earthquakes and tsunamis and nuclear difficulties at one or more plants. What's the state of play? What are the prognoses for the Japanese?
The two reactors that have been troubled, 3 and 4, seem to be spewing smoke. That means that there's probably additional radioactivity going into the air. The assurances that we've received over the last week have, you know, mostly proved to be either devious or over-optimistic. They got a lot more to go. And the real issue here is that the Japanese government and Tokyo Electric, the operator of the plant, should have brought in the U.S. Navy onboard nuclear response teams. There's two carriers in the area. There's the Ronald Reagan and the George Washington. And Navy experts could have probably sort of alleviated the situation if they were brought in as soon as the accident occurred. Unfortunately, they were not.
Do we know why, Gordon? Was it a matter of national pride or sensitivity about having Americans coming to their aid on a nuclear-related matter?
I don't think it was the sensitivity about Americans. I think it really was Tokyo Electric's inability to deal forthrightly with these problems. This problem of Tokyo Electric goes way back into the 1970s. There were problems at the 2007 earthquake at a nuclear reactor of the company. This really is just a problem with this company. And so therefore, because they weren't being forthright, the Japanese government was not really in a position to know the facts. And therefore, Tokyo just didn't bring in the Navy at the appropriate time.
Mm. That's a real shame if the effect of it might have been to alleviate some of the hardship that their people are going to be experiencing and perhaps others beyond. Gordon, let's switch gears here, if we can, from that difficult and ongoing drama in Japan to one of our hearty perennials here at Secure Freedom Radio, namely Communist China. We have been hearing a bit and would love to have you comment upon China's attitude towards this Libya business. They abstained in the UN Security Council, of course, allowing a resolution to take action against Libya to be approved there. They are investing heavily in energy in places like Saudi Arabia in the Middle East, which are also being subjected, as I talked about a short while ago with Ralph Peters, to varying degrees of ferment. What's China's role? What do you think their attitude towards all of this awakening business is at the moment?
Well, to its credit, China abstained on the vote at the Security Council on Resolution 1973. But since Thursday, when that resolution was passed, the foreign ministry has twice condemned the bombing. And I think what's going to happen is that China is going to do Libya's bidding, largely because the Libyans are going to make a big stink in the Security Council and elsewhere about the bombing. Their point is that the bombing has gone beyond the terms of the Security Council resolution. That's not right. They are wrong. But nonetheless, I'm sure Beijing is going to take up that cause in order to gain favor with the Gaddafi regime. This is really quite serious, and I suppose that the future, you know, there's going to be a lot of questioning of the bombing campaign. But nonetheless, we got to remain resolute. And one more thing. We have the right to bomb Libya regardless of the Security Council resolution, because Gaddafi has killed Americans. He should be tried in an American court. You know, it's fine to bring him to the International Criminal Court, but I would rather see him in the Federal District Court for the Eastern District of Virginia.
Yeah, well, there's going to be some tricky business there, given that we ostensibly are not going to put people on the ground to do anything, let alone to snatch Gaddafi. And I guess really it comes down to whether there will be some regime change affected from within, and as again we've been talking about elsewhere in the program, what will come next. And I'm hoping for the best, but I'm not too hopeful. Gordon, just sticking with this issue of China and energy investments, what can you tell us about what they're up to elsewhere in the region, and what might that portend?
Well, a couple things. On Saturday, the president of the Libya's national oil company said that he was willing to grant expedited leases to a number of countries, including China. Also, we have seen Chinese investment and growing relations with the oil industries in both Saudi Arabia and Kuwait. China is now Saudi Arabia's biggest customer. Those two countries are getting much closer together. We are going to see not only Chinese investments in the Gulf, we're going to see investments from the Gulf in China, like the refinery that is probably going to be signed up in the next couple of days.
Yeah, all of which portends perhaps problems at our expense. I know that the Saudis have already put China ahead of the United States as their most favored client when it comes to energy exports. So that does not augur well. Gordon, we've had two things that I'd also like to get you to comment on the remaining couple of minutes we have with you. I understand today that Google has once again protested what they consider to be Chinese attacks on them, specifically on their Gmail service. that that is interfering with service, at least with respect to clients of theirs in China. Also, Sarah Palin last week spoke rather vociferously about her concerns about the Chinese military threat developing to apparently a fairly receptive audience in India. Does this augur a likely prominence of the Chinese threat, the Chinese buildup in the upcoming U.S. presidential sweepstakes? So Gmail and then the presidency.
Gmail has been under attack, and Google has been under attack by the Chinese central government for many years now. So I'm not surprised by this most recent development. China's hackers stole Google's source code. And so essentially what we've got is they've got the keys. And so we shouldn't be surprised when Beijing goes after Google. And this is going to continue. This is not the last word we've seen on this. On Sarah Palin, I think that this really shows that there's been a change not only in Sarah Palin's mind, but also throughout the American political spectrum. We could see China becoming a very important issue in the 2012 elections. Stephen Hayes of the Weekly Standard says that he even thinks that the 2012 presidential election will turn on foreign policy issues, not domestic ones. You know, when he said that 6 months ago, people sort of scratched their heads. Now he's really looking like he knows what's going to happen.
Yeah, look, it would certainly be warranted, I think, based on just what's going on in the world today, let alone what may have been affected in the interim between now and 2012, that once again we'll see the pendulum swing, Gordon Chang, from the kind of domestic focus exclusively of the last election cycle to one in which this plays a much more prominent role. I guess the outstanding question will be whether there will be a Republican candidate that will be sufficiently credible and demonstrably competent in this space to take to task, I think, properly the president that will be the presumed Democratic candidate, President Obama. What's your thought on that, very quickly?
Oh, that's really a difficult question. I'm not sure the Republicans have really grasped China, and in many ways their China positions and their positions on some foreign policy issues are really not to be admired. It just really depends on who the candidate is. I'd like to see someone who, you know, has the same attitude as John McCain. Obviously, it won't be McCain, but I hope that McCain's views will dominate the Republican primaries.
Which were, as I recall, a fairly hard line on what China is up to, but not for protectionism on trade policy and that sort of thing. Gordon Chang, we'll be watching, needless to say, the presidential sweepstakes as they loom, and certainly following the developments that bear considerably greater attention to foreign policy with your good help in the weeks to come. Thank you so much for joining us, as always, Gordon Chang.
Thanks to all of you for doing so as well. I hope you'll join us again tomorrow, same time, same station. Until then, this is Frank Affney.
From the nation's capital, you've been listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.